I'm Eduardo Ochoa, president of CSUMB, and I'm pleased to welcome you to the third session of the 2015-16 President Speaker Series. Today, we will be discussing workforce development. It is an issue that will have dramatic impact on the economic welfare of this region, as well as on the personal success and satisfaction of those who will help move that economy forward. I recently saw some numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics about how today's workforce compares to that 40 years ago. That's when many people now nearing retirement age were just starting their careers. In the 1970s, the U.S. was a manufacturing and retail-dominated economy. Today, those employment areas have shrunk, while the service sector has exploded, employing four times as many people now as it did 40 years ago. And while the Labor Bureau statistics don't break out the health sector, it is safe to assume growth in health employment is a major factor in that increase. Also, if I had been sitting in the audience at a session like this four decades ago, I doubt if the speaker would have said that an obscure file-sharing service, mainly being used by the Department of Defense and academic researchers, was going to transform the way we work and live. In 1974, it was given the name of the Internet. Perhaps you've heard of it. Back then, owners of big retail stores had no inkling of Amazon, newspaper publishers had no forewarning of Craigslist, and on and on. Today, the largest companies by market capitalization are Apple, Alphabet, which is the new parent company of Google, and Microsoft, not General Motors or General Electric. While it's hard to predict the next big thing to have a transformational impact, it is safe to say that the continuing revolution in information technology, the continuing expansion of computing power through what is known as Moore's Law, is going to increasingly change, transform radically our world, especially through the application of artificial intelligence. We can't be sure exactly which jobs are going to be eliminated and which ones are going to be created as a result of that revolution. So we in higher education have a responsibility to educate our students to be flexible thinkers, clear communicators, and collaborative problem solvers so they can be adaptable to whatever the workforce turns out to be. We don't know what the next four decades will bring, but we want our graduates to be ready, not just to react to those events, but to help shape them. Today, we will hear from a panel of three people who can share their distinct viewpoints on the workforce of today and of the future. And let me introduce the first speaker, Tim Rainey. Tim Rainey is executive director of the California Workplace Development Board, which works with Governor Brown on the development and oversight of the state's workforce investment system. Previously, Mr. Rainey served as director of the Workforce and Economic Development Program of the California Labor Federation and as policy director of the California Workforce Association. Our next speaker will be Chris Benner. Chris Benner is a professor of environmental studies at UC Santa Cruz, has focused his research on regional labor markets and how they deal with technological change while providing economic opportunity. I should also mention that Dr. Benner's co-authored the book, Equity, Growth, and Community, What the Nation Can Learn from America's Metro Areas, with Manuel Pastor, who spoke to our President's Speaker Series last year. And finally, our third speaker will be Rick Entel. Rick Entel is the CEO of Tanimura & Entel and has led the company since its formation in 1982. During that time, the agricultural industry has been subject to a long list of regulatory and technological changes and disruptions to its labor market. Through it all, Tanimura & Entel has maintained its leadership position through innovation while helping to build stronger communities. While our panelists are making their presentations, please write any questions you might have on the cards provided, and we will have staff members in the audience to pick them up for the Q&A session to follow. And now I will ask Tim to begin today's discussion. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, President Ochoa. Delighted to be here. Thank you for the invitation. It just occurred to me as I sat down that I really should have been more careful about what socks I wore today. Mine are not just black. My wife picked these out. I worked for the senator in Sacramento. His name will not be mentioned. O'Connell, who was superintendent of schools also. I don't know why I'm telling this story, because I'm thinking socks. I was in a meeting with him. It was my first day as staff for the Senate Democratic Caucus, and it was a staff meeting, and Senator O'Connell came in, and he sat down, and when he sat down, the pant leg kind of pulled up, and I noticed on the back of his heel a gaping hole in his sock. And since then, I've been like, I got to be really careful about what socks I wear. He clearly was very busy with other things and didn't need to worry about what socks he was wearing. Please do not share that. Oh, it's videotaped. Perfect. That's not what I came to talk about. I wanted to discuss a few things. I think it'll cue up my PowerPoint presentation in a second. Do I have to do something to make that show on the screen? I just need to say it. Maybe. So I want to talk about a few things, and I'll do it quickly because there are much smarter people who are queued up to talk after me. One, in the context of building the 21st century workforce, want to, of course, talk about what the State Workforce and Development Board is doing on behalf of Governor Brown and behalf of the people of California. But the considerations that went into developing our state strategic plan on behalf of the governor are largely three things. One is relative job insecurity. Technology is your best friend. I spent all morning making this PowerPoint. It's got to work.
I see it here.
Oh, you guys are fine. Everybody come up on stage because it's right here. Just don't look at my socks. I'm just the person they put up as they go through the technological glitches to entertain you while things get sorted out.
You saved your jumper now.
So I'll talk about job insecurity, relative job insecurity, declining intergenerational income mobility, which is a mouthful, and retiring baby boomers. Actually, all themes that President Ochoa touched on in his comments at the start. I have these awesome slides that I'll show you. But what we're trying to do is better understand what's happening in labor markets around the state of California, because California, as you know, is not a monolith economically. It's a bunch of regional economies that often compete globally. So when you talk about labor markets in Monterey County, for instance, or in the Central Coast, you're going to see something and talk about something very different in Los Angeles, the greater LA region. So we talk about labor markets, plural. We want to understand those so we can make better policy decisions in Sacramento, develop better program. But also provide good guidance to practitioners out there all over the state. And that concludes my remarks. All right, I got a clicker. Boom. What I was going to actually say also is I'm going to talk very generally about labor markets and how that impacts the work we do. But the person that's really going to get into detail is Professor Chris Benner, who has written a bunch of fantastic books about this stuff. So when I'm done and he gets up here and talks, you're going to realize that this was a lot of baloney, because he's going to dig into the detail of how these things actually work. And then you're going to hear from the private sector. My friend Andy, who's going to talk about how it really happens with business on the ground and the challenges there. So first, job insecurity. I think you guys feel this. How many of you in the audience, there is an audience, how many of you are students? Right on. How many of you want to be students forever? Yeah, I'm not talking to the professors. We're on to you guys. There was a time, a long time ago, when you could train for a specific job with a specific skill and do well in the labor market. You could stay in an occupation or a career forever. In fact, when my dad graduated high school and went to work directly for, near Kansas City, Delco Battery, he could reasonably expect to stay there until he retired. Things, though, of course, as you know, and as we're going to talk more about, are very different today. You're going to change jobs many, many times throughout the course of your career, probably close to 12 job times throughout the course of your career. And I think this is actually a little bit old. This was done, a longitudinal study by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, just looking at sort of the back end of the baby boom generation. But for I think I'm Gen X, I'm not even sure, and millennials, many of you, that's probably accelerated. So it's likely more than 12 times throughout the course of your career, several more. So for success today in the labor market, it's really important to impart this reality that you are going to have to develop not a specific skill for a specific job, but broad skill sets to allow you maximum mobility through the labor market as you sort of transition from job to job, occupation to occupation sometimes, and even career. So you should consider yourselves lifetime learners or students forever, what some people call working learners. So what we've got to do is develop an education, training, employment services system statewide, regionally based, which I'll talk about more, that allows people to check in and out of the labor market throughout the course of their lives to get skill upgrading, to get new training, to get new degrees or certificates that will allow them to be the most successful in today's labor market. The next one, still on job security. These are all very uplifting slides. I understand that. This is one of my favorites. This really freaks people out. In California, there are a million involuntary job separations every month. Yeah, every month, so not every year, and in California alone. So in a labor market of 19 million workers, a million involuntary job separations a month is striking volatility in churn. So when a laid-off worker gets back into the labor market to find a job, he or she is going to lose on average between 15 and 30% of income. And that's largely, and this is based on an Urban Institute study a couple of years ago, that's largely because our benefits are employer-based. So you're disconnected from the employer, you get back in. The deal you're getting back in, both in terms of salary or wages, but also because you've lost your retirement benefits and your health insurance benefits, your income's going down by that much. So imagine this churn occurring every month in the state of California, and it's not hard to see why the middle class, not just here, but all over the country, because it's not just specific to California, why the middle class really feels squeezed. This is, I think, a very important thing to really dig into. More uplifting slides. Income mobility. I think I'm going to say something positive at the end. I haven't looked at the back end of the slides yet, but we'll see together. Intergenerational income mobility. This is the ability of somebody to move from the bottom 10% to the top 10% within his or her lifetime. So as you know, you've heard a lot, this is harder to do now than it was a long time ago when my parents were young. It's also harder to do in the U.S. than any other advanced economy in the world, Western economy. So in the United States, the biggest determinant of your future income is not how hard you work, it's not whether you play by the rules, it's not even your education level necessarily. The biggest determinant of your future income is your parents' income, which flies in the face of what we understand to be the core American value, core to the American dream, which is the equality of opportunity to get ahead no matter what the circumstances, accidental circumstances of your birth are. So Janet Yellen, no raving left-winger, head of the Federal Reserve, recently warned that income and wealth inequality are near the highest levels in the past 100 years. She talked about the Great Gatsby curve, the finding that income inequality and intergenerational mobility are inextricably linked. Mobility is less in countries that have higher or the greatest inequality. Chris is going to talk, I think, haven't seen his, actually I did see his slides because we were sitting at the bar last night going over his slides, which is a little nerdy to be sitting at the bar looking at PowerPoint slides, talking about labor markets, and everybody sort of gawking at the slides trying to make sense of his charts, which you'll see. It took a couple of beers for me to understand what he was talking about. So I think Chris is going to talk about economic growth is less in regions with greater inequality. So this is the same sort of phenomenon that's going on. The point is that inequality and income mobility are two sides of the same coin. Paul Krugman, only a little bit more rhetorical, says this. I don't need to do a dramatic reading. Training and education alone, we know, are not going to solve poverty. We've got issues of housing, transportation, issues you're looking at regionally, healthy communities, health insurance, and access to health insurance, so it's not just employer-based. And then workers' relative bargaining power, these are all critical factors. So education and training are not the only things that are going to move the needle on income mobility across the country or in Monterey County. You've got to look at all these pieces. But a decent income for parents is essential, and certainly education and training is going to have influence there. I say parents because I deal with the adult side, a lot of us do, in terms of education and training. And again, it's back to the ability of people to check back into the education and training system as they need new skills, as employers require different kinds of skills. This is not something that's very easy for people to navigate currently. So baby boomers are retiring finally, hopefully, over the next 10 years or so. We talked about this at lunch. how many people in here were born between 1946 and 1964? Some of you are lying. I can see your faces. No, I was kidding. So keep your hands up for a second, actually. All right, if you're younger, look at a person with their hand up. You're going to take their job pretty soon. Not right now. You know, give them a little time. You can put your hands down now. Not soon enough. Good. So between 2012 and 2022, California is projected to have approximately 6.3 million job openings. As you've heard, California is outpacing the country in job growth. Yay, California. Way ahead of Texas. Isn't that lovely? That's a little political dig there. However, most of the job openings are not due to growth, they're due to the baby boomers retiring. A full 2 out of every 3 jobs over the next 10 years will be open because of replacement, somebody retiring. Important to think about, especially from a workforce perspective and a practitioner's perspective, because it's a great opportunity to work with employers, and this is true across industry sectors, to work with employers to train people up to take those jobs that are being vacated by the baby boomers, and then we can move new people in with good quality training and certificates that have value in the labor market at the front end or at the entry level. So I don't think about the retirements necessarily as a crisis, but as an opportunity. And we hope you guys have a lot of good golf in your retirement, if you golf. So to the state plan, what the hell are we doing? Schumpeter, an early 20th century Austrian economist that some of you may have heard of because he coined this term creative destruction. Have you heard that term? It's been bandied about by mostly management type gurus. His definition of economic development is putting existing resources to work in new ways. And so when people ask me what the State Workforce Board is up to on behalf of the governor and developing the state strategic plan for the next 4 years, what I say is, we're in the business of creative realignment. That's putting existing programs and resources to work in new ways to achieve scale and greater employment impact in a way that responds to what's happening to workers and businesses in today's labor market, not what was happening in the 1970s. So why alignment and scale? Why is that important? We talk about silos. That's programs that are built specifically for maybe a particular population. Silos are talked about in Sacramento as bad, but they're not bad because there are populations that need specific focus, low-income adults, migrant seasonal farm workers, people with disabilities, veterans, other groups, reentry, the reentry supervised population. We need to have programs that are really focused on moving the needle in terms of employment for specific populations. So silos aren't bad. What is the enemy of good work, I think, is fragmentation. So if you've got, for example, a local education, a workforce program, it can change a life. It can change many lives. But if you have multiple workforce education, training, employment services programs that are working together in common behind a common agenda for a common good, with common goals and metrics and all these things. If you do that and you organize it that way, it doesn't just change a life, it can change communities. So that's why we talk a lot about alignment and getting rid of the silos, or at least getting the different programs to talk together and work together better. So we aim to shift at the State Workforce Board a workforce system that is currently largely locally based programs and fragmented to locally based services that are guided by regionally defined vision and goals. And why regional? Why is regional important? We talked about this at lunch and a little bit back in the green room as we were watching you come in. We watch you come in, by the way, so I know a lot about you that you don't know I know. I'll tell you later during the Q&A. Why regional? To achieve meaningful impacts, programs need to connect to the employers that are driving regional employment. So if you've got employment, workforce, education, training programs that have no relevance whatsoever to the companies in your region and what their needs are immediately, but also over the longer term, if you don't have that calibration of supply and demand, you're not going to do anybody any good. You're going to be training people, throwing them out in the labor market, hoping that they do well, have success. The chances are they won't unless you can align these things very closely. So that's why we talk about regional. It also is because industry sectors don't organize within political jurisdictions or program jurisdictions. They tend to organize regionally. So we can't think about how we work within our own program jurisdiction. I did this with a lot of fear that I wouldn't be able to explain it. I think it's self-explanatory. I'll try to describe it. So in any particular region, so you look at the bottom there, the supply, and it's not on the bottom for any particular reason, just because I'm not very good at PowerPoint. If you look at the supply in a particular region, there are multiple programs, right? They're all doing their own thing generally. Again, they're fragmented. They have different performance requirements from either the federal government or the state government, different populations they have to serve, different ways of reporting data, different service delivery kind of cultures. They just basically tend not to work together. They also, many of these programs, are required by statute or by regulations or whatever, or because they think it needs to be done, to have an industry advisory group. So a lot of these programs will individually and separately have industry advisory groups where they're talking to employers, maybe in the right sectors, but they're all doing it separately and inviting them to separate tables, the same employers to separate tables, and driving the demand sector or the demand side absolutely crazy. A person over there on the left scratching his or her head, big question mark, who needs to navigate all of these programs to get the wherewithal, the aptitudes and skills to be successful at the top in with jobs with those sectors that are driving regional employment, is going to have a heck of a time navigating all of this. What often happens to people is they get access to one program because they walked into one door and ended up having to get services someplace else and then doing things all over again. So there's a lot of redundancy built into the way things are currently not organized. On the demand side, you have a similar problem. Employers don't, this is the big secret, they don't tend to work together across sectors, right? So they don't sit down and think about a common vision for organizing talent in a region to help deal with their skills gaps, impending or immediate and real. They don't even organize within a sector. So manufacturers in a particular region don't sit down, because they're busy competing, right? They generally don't sit down and think about how are we going to build a skilled workforce in common. What they do is they come at it sort of separately, again, kind of like silos. So there's no organization on either the supply or demand side. So what we're trying to do from Sacramento, although you can't drive things from Sacramento, we know that, is to organize the supply side, right? To put some form around it. Again, if everybody's kind of marching to the same drum, it's the same vision for the economy over the next 5 to 10 years, same kind of common goals, we get the data stuff right so we can share data. You organize that piece, you're gonna get the kind of scale that'll make big employment impacts. You gotta do the same stuff on the demand side. We've gotta organize the demand side. I actually learned at lunch that this is already happening here, and President Ochoa is actually leading the charge on exactly this stuff. So if you were at lunch, I'm really sorry for repeating this, and you're like, oh, go tell somebody else we're already doing it in this region. But for those of you who weren't at lunch, you missed really good rice. So we've got to organize the demand side and the supply side. What we're investing in Sacramento, all over the state, is developing that middle piece, the regional leadership. So this is where the industry folks in those sectors that are driving regional employment, those employers, are at that table. Labor organizations that represent the workers in those sectors, civic leaders, political leaders, community-based organizations, education leaders like President Ochoa, and government. At that table, defining the vision for the region, where it needs to be economically and socially over the next decade or so. And then setting out that North Star, we hope it's improving intergenerational income ability, but organizing the supply side and the demand side so that they work together in tandem. So you get something like this. The ability of people to come in and navigate the various programs because they're working together. You're not going to have to start over all the time. You reduce the duplication, you increase the scale, you increase the employment impacts. But those programs are all together connecting the job seekers, the workers, the students, to good jobs in those industry sectors that are driving regional employment. So what you achieve, if we do all this right, if we get the skills agenda right, is the companies get the skilled workforce they need, they're more competitive, they grow, they add jobs, more people have jobs, they get paid, they have more money in their pockets, they go in their communities and they spend that money in the community, and that primes a pump and you create this virtuous cycle. I know this is not easy to do. Anybody here watch South Park? Nobody watches South Park. This is being recorded, so I'll be careful. Really, not that many people watch South Park, huh? All right, well, there's this episode of South Park where the characters have a plan, they steal underwear, and they want to make money from stolen underwear. And that's the plan. They got step one and they got step three, but they don't have no idea how to turn stolen underwear into making money. So that middle part is completely, it's very funny. You really have to, trust me, you got to go find this episode. So what we understand, we don't got step three dialed either. We know we got to steal underwear. And we know we got to make money on the stolen underwear. But it's really up to the partnerships and the leadership at the regional level to define that middle piece. How do you get from here to there, to the North Star, to the making money on stolen underwear, I guess. And finally, the state plan does talk about the strategic plan, which is an absolutely wonderful read. It's 1,000 pages written by government bureaucrats. It is such a page turner. In essence, it talks about all the things I discussed, how to connect income mobility and regional prosperity, because these, again, are two sides of the same coin. It's an operations manual. It's not an operations manual. I said that completely backwards. It's a framework for regional coalitions to develop, do the kinds of things I talked about on those other slides, to get the scale, get big impacts in terms of income mobility, employment impacts, but also to drive economic development. This is where workforce development and economic development, I think, have that sweet spot and really come together. And I'll just leave you with this. Martin Luther King was in March 68 talking to sanitation workers. This was a time toward the end of his life where he was really connecting civil rights and economic rights, which is a very dangerous thing, and it will get you killed. But this is the kind of stuff we're talking about. I won't read this out loud because every time I do, I get choked up. So you take a second to read it, and I'll go sit down. Thank you very much.